seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Welcome in to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you as we start off a brand new week and we have brand new sports to talk about. Spring sports season for high school athletics. Boy, it's been a long time. And, well, part of the reason it's been so long is we only got about five or six games in last year before COVID-19 shut down the entire spring sports season. And because of that, the process is so much different for this year in comparison to years past because you didn't have underclassmen experiencing growth through game. We didn't have a state champion. Talking baseball, softball, track and field. I mean, you just go down the list. And so with all that being said, I really think that this year creates an element of the unknown. I mean, it's hard to do a season preview. We've done some of those right now at CastleCountryRadio.com, but it's hard to do because you don't have a lot to go off of. We're going to start talking spring sports. In fact, it begins tomorrow for Carbon Baseball. They take the field. Emory will take the field on Wednesday. We're going to talk to Coach Rob Smith, entering year four as manager of the Emory baseball team. We'll talk about the offseason, how odd it was, and the goal for the eight non-region games that Emory gets this year before diving into league play on March 23rd against Grand. Spring sports, it comes in such a hurry, and it's over really fast. The state tournament is exactly 2 months from today. That's how fast baseball, softball, track and field, that's how fast those seasons go by. Tennis, can't forget about tennis. So we'll talk some spring sports. That's coming up on the show in just a bit. We'll also talk NBA basketball. The second half of the season will get off and rolling this week. We had probably the most lackluster all-star game I've witnessed in a long time. I couldn't get into it this year. I tried. I love the game of basketball so much. I just could not get behind, not All-Star Weekend, but All-Star Day. Had the three-point contest, which was fun. Steph Curry tops Mike Conley. Steph's one of the greatest shooters of all time. I think you could have predicted that he would win. Conley gave him a run for his money. The dunk contest was just a bore. And I, again, I'm not a huge fan of the dunk contest to begin with, but last night's dunk contest was, it just wasn't good. It wasn't entertaining. The dunk that wins it is a near kiss of the rim. I mean, think about that. Creativity, everything's been done. Everything's been done in the dunk contest, and it's not as if we're getting superstars participating in it. I thought that was a bore. The All-Star game itself, you know, the majority of talent in this game did not want to be present for the contest. And so, all in all, if I had to give it a grade, I'm going to give All-Star Weekend a D+. It wasn't entertaining. And again, I can't call it All-Star Weekend. All-Star Day. That's what we have to call it. But the basketball season will pick back up on Wednesday. So we get tonight and tomorrow off, and then we're back at it Wednesday, and then Thursday and Friday we have full slates. The Jazz actually return to the court on Friday. And so we'll look at a path to the one seed for the Utah Jazz. They have the easiest schedule in the Western Conference over the final 2 months of the season. Easiest schedule. Right now, 2.5 games up on the Phoenix Suns. And we thought that Utah needed the one seed to avoid both LA teams. And as we sit right now, they would have to go through the Clippers in the second round or the Lakers in the third round if everything was to play out the way we would anticipate. I don't think you can count out Phoenix. But the one seed path. Utah's lost four out of their last seven games going into the break, and they were playing at an unreal pace before that stretch. But we'll take a look at that. We'll also look at the paths of the teams that are trying to run down the Jazz. Phoenix Suns, are they for real? I think they're every bit as real as the Utah Jazz. I still think both of those teams are chasing down the Lakers, and I think you could probably say they're chasing down the Clippers as well. Just because we know what we get out of those teams. We know. Over the course of a full season, we know what to expect. The Clippers struggled in the bubble last year. The Lakers won a championship. But when you look at it, this Laker team is built with LeBron and AD. When they're healthy, it's a tough team. The Clippers, they're built around Kawhi and Paul George, right? We'll talk more about that a little bit later on in the show. Speaking of the NBA, Blake Griffin is now officially signed with the Brooklyn Nets. We saw this coming over the weekend. It became apparent that Griffin was going to head to Brooklyn. Yeah, I guess it adds depth. I mean, this is not the Blake Griffin of 3 years ago. This is not the human highlight reel that you don't expect to see Kyrie Irving and James Harden just throw this guy lobs. He hasn't dunked in 2 years in the NBA. It's a different kind of Blake Griffin. Nice depth piece, though. I don't think there's any question about that. And now the attention is turned to Andre Drummond. And this is another topic that I want to get into a little bit later on in the show. He's in the final year of his deal with the Cleveland Cavaliers. If the Cavs cannot trade him within the next 2 weeks, they will release him. And Mark Stein is reporting that the Lakers believe they would be the team to land Drummond. Drummond is a much nicer piece than Blake Griffin. We're talking about a guy that's averaging 17 and 13, and he can offer you some rim protection. There's a number of teams in the Western Conference that can use that. But this is the problem with the NBA. The buyout market has become a problem. Because there's ways around the salary cap in every sport, but in the NBA, I mean, you got a guy that's got a terrible contract, say Blake Griffin, who's a nice piece, he's okay. He gets released. Nets get him on a next-to-nothing deal for the remainder of the year. It's going to be the same thing with Andre Drummond. And since 1980, we've had 11 teams in the NBA win a championship. Well, a lot of that in today's world has to do with the buyout market. You go back to last season. The Clippers made a trade for Marcus Morris. The Lakers sat back, did not make a move, did not give up any assets, and grabbed Markieff Morris on the buyout market. I think that's a problem in the NBA. Now, Cleveland should be able to move Drummond, and we'll approach this a little bit later on. I mean, an expiring deal in the NBA, it's a valuable trade chip. We'll talk more about that in just a bit. We still have spring training for Major League Baseball going on right now. I actually got to watch some of that over the weekend, and I dig it. Really, I dig spring training baseball. We got a few more weeks of this before we open up the season. But, boy, spring training baseball, some of the storylines that are floating around. You see Yadi Molina, who's going to break a record for most consecutive opening day starts for a catcher in the National League. That play that he had yesterday, just daring Astros rookie Martin Maldonado to run, just daring him. In fact, he told him to. They played a little count and mouse for a moment, and then the old man Yadi rifles back, and he just completely obliterates this rookie pitch runner at second base. It was fun. Those are the stories in spring training baseball that I like. Trevor Bauer throwing an inning with his eye closed. One eye closed. Said he's got to prepare for whatever comes his way throughout the season. You get little tidbits in spring training because I guess it's so long. And the baseball season itself is so long that you wonder how these guys can keep interest in spring training. No, they got a 162-game season on the way. Spring training baseball has been a lot of fun. If we have some time, we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Outside of that, really, we have nothing going on except for college basketball. And we're gearing up for March Madness. Conference tournaments are underway. That's about it. Sports schedule is a little bit bleak, so we're going to take a quick commercial break. Coming up, the local sports scene. We'll give you the recap on everything that went down over the weekend. Plus, we'll be joined by Emory High School baseball manager Rob Smith. That's all coming up, but it's here on Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with junior college athletics. And on Friday night, the USU Eastern women's volleyball team moved to 18-3 overall and 4-1 as in conference play, as they had a big bounce-back victory over Colorado Northwestern in straight sets, 3-0. USU Eastern was looking to rebound from their first conference loss a week ago from Friday. They suffered a 4-loss set to Salt Lake Community College. The Lady Eagles showed no signs of a hangover. They were dominant throughout the contest. They won the first set 25-11, the second set 25-12, the third set 25-11. Still ranked inside the top five nationally, USU Eastern will return to the court on Wednesday. They'll travel to Henderson, Nevada, as they take on the College of Southern Nevada, and that'll set the stage for another road contest on Friday at Snow College. Now we continue with USU Eastern athletics, but we move over to the basketball court. And the USU Eastern men's team suffered back-to-back conference losses last week, including a setback on Saturday to CSI, dipping their overall record to 9-6 and their conference mark at 2-6. USU Eastern fell behind early in the contest against CSI and could not get out of the hole. The Eagles trailed 34-23 at the end of the first half and ended up losing 79-70. Despite the loss for the Eagles, they were once again led by Dontrell Hewlett. He finished with a team-high 22 points on an efficient 7 of 12 shooting performance. Peter Filipovich chipped in with 13, while Jesse White finished 10. USU Eastern will now begin a three-game homestand that starts this Thursday as they take on the College of Southern Nevada. On Saturday, USU Eastern will return to the court to take on Colorado Northwestern. Now we stick with basketball, but we move over to the girls' side of the court, and the USU Eastern Lady Eagles earned a victory on Saturday, moving their overall record to 10-5 and their conference record to 5-3. USU Eastern outgunned the College of Southern Idaho in Twin Falls by a final score of 69-59, rebounding from a loss to Snow College on Thursday. USU Eastern trailed by one at the break, but outscored CSI 17-10 in the third quarter, en route to a 10-point win. The Lady Eagles had five individuals score double figures. Brooklyn Palmer finished with a team-high 16 points as she knocked down 6 of 7 shots from the field. Kinley Toomer finished with 13, while Caselyn Toomer, Kasia Glasker, and Ella Bradley all scored 10. USU Eastern will now begin a three-game homestand just like the men. On Thursday, they'll take on the College of Southern Nevada. Live coverage of that contest will air on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM beginning at 4:30 PM, followed by tip-off again at 5. We move over to the high school scene. And this week, it'll be the beginning of the spring sports season. With winter all wrapped up, baseball and softball will be the first to kick off the spring season, which only made it about 2 weeks last year due to COVID-19. Today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll begin to preview the spring sports season as we catch up with Emory High School baseball manager Rob Smith. The Spartans will open up the season later this week. We'll also catch up with head coach Jeff Cincinnatus of the Carbon Dino baseball team later on in the week. Carbon will open up the season tomorrow. We'll take a look at both baseball programs as well as softball in the coming days as we prepare for the upcoming season. You'll find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
The winter sports season, it's officially done as far as high school is concerned, and this week we dive right into the spring sports season. We don't get a long break, and the spring sports season doesn't last very long, so it's really condensed, and we're going to talk about that more as we preview the upcoming baseball season. Joining us right now in studio, we have Emory High School baseball manager Rob Smith. Coach, always a pleasure. I appreciate you making time to come in today. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, always, always. Coach, we'll talk about the offseason. First off, it was a long offseason for spring sports because you only got about 5 or 6 games in last year. And so going back to the way last season came to a close, did it give you more time to prepare for this year, to look ahead? What was that process like, knowing that, okay, we get 5, 6 games, it's over?
It was kind of frustrating. You gear up ready to play and get shut down 5, 7 games in. Kind of frustrating, like I said, but I mean, we did get some summer stuff in that helped a little bit. I mean, it obviously hurts not being able to play a full schedule, and those younger kids not being able to play at all. They didn't get any experience. But going forward, I mean, we're ready to work. Our kids are ready to work, and I mean, they missed the game last year, so they're wanting to play this year.
You know, when you talk about really not getting a ton of experience last year, it does affect this team. You only have, what, six seniors, is that right?
Yep, correct.
Six seniors on this year's team, so it's not as if there's a ton of experience coming back to begin with. So when you talk about playing last summer, what were some of the things, some of the teams that you guys were able to go up against, and I guess the level of competition?
We played two really good teams, Payson, Uinta. They kind of took it to us, but we were young, inexperienced team then. Like I said, we didn't get much room to grow. So, I mean, we're still young as in playing experience, but we are maturing. So going forward, I think we'll be okay.
And one of the things, again, as I mentioned, that stands out to me, it's always the spring sports season. We get 2 months. That's it. I mean, winter, you're at all the basketball games.
Yeah.
If you're officiating or if you're up in the concession stands, you're at every basketball game. And it's November to basically March. I mean, you got a long time to grow a team. When we're talking baseball, you don't have that luxury.
No, I mean, we had 2 days of tryouts last week and then 2 days of practice due to having prom. We couldn't really practice Friday. We'll get 2 days of practice this week. So we're looking 4 days of practice before our first game.
And then you guys have eight games, and we'll dissect the non-region portion of the schedule here in just a moment. But even during basketball season, your open gyms are probably few, far, and in between, just based on the fact that basketball is literally every single night. These kids are playing 2 to 3 games a week. It's not easy to be a baseball or a softball coach.
Right. It's tough to get kids in shape, and then the ones that do play basketball, they don't have a lot of time to get their arms in shape as well. So, I mean, let's jump in and go full bore.
I guess it was a little bit different this year, considering that the basketball season ended a week before. Emory's basketball season ended a week before other schools, or some schools, not getting past that play-in round. So, did give you, I guess, maybe an extra week. Did it at all? Were you able to do anything that week?
No, the state has a moratorium that week, so we weren't able to do anything.
Just make it easy. They don't make it easy on you guys, right, put it right that way. Well, let's talk about the schedule all the way through. We'll start March 10th. That's coming up in just 2 days. Home contest against Providence Hall. So an opportunity for fans to get out and watch this Emory baseball team. And it's your last chance for a little while, because after that, you guys are going to be road tested, to say the least.
Yeah, we're on the road a lot after that. We go to North St. Pete the next day and then ALA Friday. Then we have a few days off, and then we head to North Sevier Tournament. We play 4 games there.
3 games in 3 days, and I know that, again, the schedule is so really compressed, but with that being said, you got to win 3 games in 3 days to be a state champion anyway. Do you think about that when you put a schedule together?
Not really. Not at the first this season. Most of my thoughts are, let's get some playing time, let's get some experience, kind of see where we sit.
Typically, it's a road trip to Mesquite. It's an opportunity to get the kids out, stay in a hotel room. Don't have that luxury this year.
No.
You know, the North Sevier tournament, it's not like you're traveling, you know, hours away. So where do you garner that type of team chemistry? Because I know when talking to you in years past, you always look forward to the Mesquite trip for that very reason.
Yeah, we're gonna try to make it a little bit the same. We are going to try to stay in Richfield. That Saturday we play early, so we're going to try to make the same overnight trip type thing, same experience for the kids that weekend. So trying to team building that weekend.
Again, our guest right now is manager Rob Smith of the Emory High School baseball team. Coach, let's talk about the makeup of the team. We'll start with your rotation. We'll start with the pitchers. You told me off of the cuff, you got a lot of kids that can throw. You got several arms coming back from last season, 2 seasons ago, even some kids that did pick up some time. So let's start with the pitchers. Walk me through what you guys have.
I got Luke Stiltson. He's a senior. Probably my ace. Throws really well. Throws a lot of strikes. We got Trevin Wakefield, Oakley Alton, Riker Jensen, Ty Stiltson. I mean, we've got a lot of pitchers that throw. Those are probably my main ones, starters, but we do have a lot that can throw after that as well.
Once we get into region play, and I don't really want to use the first game against Grand as an example because it's on March 23rd, then you get Juab the 24th, and then Grand the 25th again, so it's 3 games in 3 days. But if we jump ahead, we'll say to the beginning of April. You get San Juan, and then you go into spring break, and then you get South Sevier, and then 2 days off in South Sevier again, and then 4 days off. So when you really get into the meat of the region schedule, how deep of a rotation, a starting rotation, do you actually need?
2 to 3 kids. Maybe 4 at tops, just depending on how well they're feeling, if they're throwing strikes or not. Yeah, 3 or 4, and then just kind of utilize those 4 kids and go from there.
It's one of the big differences from, say, JUCO baseball, which we're following right now. You got to have 4 or 5, maybe even 6 guys deep. You guys don't have to have that, especially with the structure of the region schedule. And so, all in all, how many arms do you want coming out of the pen? I mean, just all the way around, how many arms do you need as a manager to feel comfortable?
I would say 7, 8, but like I said, I'll take all of them, just depending on if we're throwing strikes or not.
It's a good luxury to have.
All hands on deck.
Yeah, it's a good luxury to have. As far as what we may see in the batting order, I know that scoring runs, you have to score to win games. It's pretty simple. So when you take a look at your different types of hitters that you have on the team, where do they fit in and who are they?
Luke Stilson, again, probably one of my better hitters. Ryker Jensen, Ty Stilson, Oakley Alton. Those are probably my top hitters. It's going to be putting the ball in play and moving runners over. The last few years, I feel like we've lost a lot of runners stranded in scoring position, and that's kind of been our downfall. We get bases loaded with one out or less and don't score. It's kind of frustrating. So it's going to be putting the ball in play and scoring runs.
Do you have to implement small ball a little bit more this year to get that done?
Yeah, I believe so.
Is that difficult to do?
Not really. I mean, you don't really see it in Major League Baseball anymore.
No, you don't.
It's kind of sad. That's what baseball is, and I like it.
So when you look at the speed that you guys will have on the bases, are you happy with what you have there?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, we got a lot of fast kids. I mean, I got a lot of football players, a lot of basketball players. They're all in good shape, and I mean, they're not slow by any means.
So we talk about the varsity, but I know, especially with this being year 4 for you as manager at Emory, you got to focus on the young kids as well. Are you happy with what you have coming up, freshman, sophomore?
I don't have very many sophomore kids, probably 5 or 6 is all, but I do have a big freshman class, and I've been pleased with what I see there.
Have you been working with these kids prior to their time at Emory High School?
I haven't.
Because I know you coach, you also coach Little League as well. So.
Yeah. My assistant coaches have coached these freshman kids all the way up, so they know them really well.
So when you get to year 4 of a 10-year, it's got to be a little bit easier than year 1 or 2.
I know the kids a lot better. I know how they play. I know their mannerisms, their mentality. So that does help going forward.
Let's talk about the makeup of the region. I mean, it's tough. Grand, San Juan, South Sevier, Carbon, Richfield. It's not an easy region in any sport that we're talking about. How do you see it shaping up from a competition level standpoint?
I think it's going to be a very competitive region. I think really just depending on who comes out and plays, it could be anyone's game. I think Carbon's going to be tough to beat. Richfield's going to be tough, as always. San Juan has a lot of returners that were young before. Grand, I don't know how they'll be. Their new coach and didn't have a lot before. So going forward, I think it's anybody's ballgame.
So what's the biggest goal between now and the start of region on March 23rd? Not that far off. I mean, 8 games. What's the biggest goal to get accomplished?
Biggest goal is to get the ball in play and score runs.
That's the biggest emphasis.
Yep.
Offense.
Yep, for sure.
So when you look at the region, knowing what teams have coming back, you feel comfortable about what you guys can do defensively, but it's the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, we got to score runs to win ball games, and that's kind of, like I said before, it's kind of been our downfall.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and you look over the last 5, 6, 7 years, you look at the state tournament, don't want to jump too far ahead, but teams that win state championships typically have to score 11, 12 runs at some point in time in that tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you've got us, it's high school baseball, we don't see the pitchers you do in a JUCO level or a college level. So you've got to be able to score runs and stick with teams that do score runs.
I know this is we got some new complexes coming at Emory High School as well, right?
Which yeah.
You're, I'm sure you're very excited about.
Yeah, it'll be nice for sure.
This is the last year on this baseball field.
Correct, yeah. So as soon as our season's over, they'll start tearing it out. looks like March 24th, they'll start building the new complexes, and they'll be done this summer.
It's not before you know it, this season's going to be over. Again, it's not a long season. April 30th, that will actually be senior day as you take on Richfield and then state tournament on May 8th. And so, Coach, I know there's going to be plenty more to talk about in the meantime. I always appreciate you taking out the time to stop in. We'll let you get, but we'll catch up again real soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Again, Coach Rob Smith of the Emory Spartan baseball team. You can get a complete schedule and preview of the upcoming season right now by visiting CastleCountryRadio.com. We're going to break for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
With the sixth pick in the 2014 NBA Draft, the Boston Celtics select Marcus Smart from Oklahoma State University.
Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Marcus Smart, what a spin move and a finish. Hard to handle Marcus Smart, whether he's outside or inside the paint.
Blake Griffin is officially a member of the Brooklyn Nets. It's the big story today in the NBA. And I believe the next big story, that'll be where's Andre Drummond going to go? NBA reporter Mark Stein reporting earlier today on Twitter that the Los Angeles Lakers believe they will be able to make a strong push for Drummond should he be bought out. And that report got me thinking about the landscape of the NBA right now, which we know it's an agent and player-driven league. We know this. More so than any other sport, even more so than the NFL. Because ultimately, at the end of the day in the NFL, if you're a free agent, your team can use a franchise tag on you twice. So if you look at a contract like Dak Prescott, Cowboys have control over Dak. We talked about this with Melvin Gordon in the Chargers when he was holding out a couple of years ago. Same thing with Le'Veon Bell. The NFL is just structured differently, plus there's a hard cap. There's so many nuances to the NBA. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a soft cap, it's not a hard cap. And I know that small market teams and fans of small market teams have complained about small markets not having the ability to keep homegrown talent. And look, I said this at the time, and I'm going to go back to it for Utah. They were lucky to not sign Gordon Hayward to that massive deal. This Jazz team is not the number one seed in the Western Conference this season if Gordon Hayward signs that deal. Doesn't happen. But that was one of the rare occasions, right? Look at Paul George with the Clippers. Indiana knew there was no chance that they were going to be able to sign this guy. They knew this. He gave them a year's notice. That's a player-driven league. You give a franchise a year notice, hey, you can trade me because I ain't coming back at the end of the season. It's a player-driven league. Anthony Davis did the same thing with the Pelicans. Just flat out told them, I'm not playing for you anymore. So what do? They ship him to LA. Again, agent-driven league. And you have to believe, when I say agent-driven, just look at LeBron James's agent and think of the backdoor deal that was swung to get AD to LA to play with LeBron. It's that simple. It's an agent-driven league. It's dangerous, though. It's becoming dangerous because now you're seeing superstars sign these wealthy deals. And that's what we had with Blake Griffin. The Clippers sign him. They trade him. Detroit doesn't see him for the length of that deal. They work a buyout. Now he gets to go to a contender. Because the Pistons were unable to build around him after acquiring that ridiculous deal. That's dangerous in the NBA. Andre Drummond. I don't believe that Drummond's going to get bought out. Actually, I don't know. I'm 50-50 on it. I say I'm 50-50 because one of the things that a lot of franchises really like, it's expiring contracts. But unless Cleveland attaches an asset, you're going to get bad contracts in return. So it all depends on the way the trade market can shape out over the next 2 weeks. But again, I'm willing to bet any amount of money that information that was released today was released by an agent to up the trade market to keep Drummond out of LA. Because I'm telling you right now, if Drummond ends up in Los Angeles, as currently constructed, I don't think anyone beats the Lakers in the Western Conference. I don't know how it shapes out between the Lakers and the Nets if that's what we get in the NBA Finals. But I definitely do not believe anyone will beat them if they add Andre Drummond. Because the one hole that I see here from the defending champs, it's rim protection. And Drummond gives you that. This is a guy that's averaging a double-double right now. And when you have a team that is stretched, they have stretched that cap out. They're luxury tax offenders. And you can add a double-double guy mid-season and not give up a single asset to get him? Well, that's dangerous for the league. And that's really the route that we're going down. So if you're a Jazz fan, you should hate this. You should hate the fact that Blake Griffin signed with the Brooklyn Nets. Not because it's going to matter come postseason time for the Jazz. I don't believe it will. But it's the precedent that's been set. And when you see Andre Drummond follow, if he is released and he signs in L.A., I say you just book it. The Lakers are your Western Conference champions. I still believe that Philadelphia can beat Brooklyn. I firmly believe that. But I think the West, it's closer than I thought going into the season. The Jazz, the Suns, the Clippers, they are closer to the Lakers than what I really thought going into the season. Still think the Lakers are the cream of the crop. But you had Andre Drummond for free? Yeah, there's no one that's going to beat that team. Because even if Anthony Davis is not 100%, you have a legitimate big in the middle, and size is a problem. Ask the Jazz. Rudy Gobert. Size is a problem. Ask the Phoenix Suns. DeAndre Ayton. The Lakers are forced to play a little bit of small ball, especially with Anthony Davis out. And they got to rely on an aging Marc Gasol. That won't be the case if they grab Andre Drummond. Now, Drummond, in my mind, is a better piece than Blake Griffin. Griffin hasn't dunked in 2 years in the NBA. That's what his game was built around explosiveness. So he's had to adapt his game, add a mid-range jump shot, knock down some three-point shots from here or there. That's not what he was asked to do when he was with the Clippers. He's a different player today. And I think he's your eighth, ninth man off the bench. Drummond may very well be a potent, well, he could be a center. He's a double-double guy. Again, he could be your starting five right out of the gate. NBA's got a problem. The problem is the buyout market, and I'm curious to see the way this season shapes that moving forward. Because if you have two players in Griffin and Drummond that play intricate roles in two teams getting to the finals against one another from the buyout market, the NBA is going to have no choice but to rework the collective bargaining agreement. They're going to have to. All right, let's step away from the buyout market talk, and let's look at the second half of the NBA season. And we'll start with the Utah Jazz. Can the Jazz maintain the best record in the NBA? Well, we always talk about the Western Conference, but we can't forget they have the best record right now in the NBA. Can they maintain that? Well, first, I have to address a lot of talk that I saw over the weekend on Twitter. Anyone that calls the Jazz a fraud, you haven't been watching basketball. They have the best point differential, plus 8 per game. It's a pretty wide margin. And I understand that Utah kind of fell off that track before the break. They lost 4 out of 7. Look, you couldn't keep the pace that they were rolling at before that little blip before the All-Star break. You just couldn't. It wasn't possible. Now, I will go back to what I have said multiple times already this season. I believe the Western Conference, being the Lakers, Clippers, maybe not the Suns, I think we can throw the Nuggets in that conversation, maybe even the Mavericks. You're going to see a different Western Conference once we hit middle of March, early April. It's going to be different. It's not to say that what Utah's done has been flukish. What I'm saying is the Jazz took advantage of load management squads. That's what they did. And here's one thing that works in Utah's favor in the second half of the season. They have the easiest, softest, weakest schedules in terms of opponents' winning percentage the rest of the way. So, if they're at 80% of what we saw the first half of the season, they should end with the best record in the Western Conference. However, there is a stretch where they play the Lakers in back-to-back games. Both of those games being in LA. Crucial stretch for the Jazz, could be a crucial stretch to see who gets the one seed. Because the Lakers will be in that conversation. I expect Anthony Davis back in a week, week and a half. And I would expect that back-to-back set to play a massive, massive role in who's the one seed and who's not. And even if the Lakers aren't contending with the Jazz for the one seed, if they're still at the 4, Phoenix, the Clippers, they're going to be nipping at Utah's heels. That's a crucial back-to-back. So then you start taking a look at some of the best games that the Jazz have the rest of the way. March 24th, they get the Nets. Potential NBA championship preview, no question. They've played once already this year. Brooklyn blew them out. Kevin Durant did not play in that game, and James Harden was not a member of the Nets, but it was early on in the season. April 17th, again, they get the Lakers. Defending champs, middle of April, that's when I think you're going to see teams really start hitting their stride. And then on May 7th, the Nuggets and the Jazz. So as far as Utah is concerned, you got a couple of key dates. But looking at the 72-game season and looking at where the Jazz are right now, there's no reason why this team, the ball's in their court. I mean, they have the easiest schedule the rest of the way. They set the tone that first half of the season. Now you just got to hope that it wasn't a sign of things to come the way they played in the final seven games going into the break. But the way things are shaping up, Utah's going to be right there to grab the number one seed in the West. And I think it's important. I do. I think it's important for a team like Utah. It's more important for a team who has never been to the finals, or a team who, I don't want to say isn't accustomed to winning. I don't want to say that. But let's be honest. I mean, this is a team that has not been to the Western Conference Finals. It's been a long time. What was it, 2008? Been a long time. You need home court, and you want to avoid the Lakers and the Clippers, and I do believe the Lakers and the Clippers will surpass the Phoenix Suns, meaning Utah would get Phoenix in round two. That's an ideal situation for Jazz fans. Some teams that could present a roadblock to Utah to getting that number one seed. Again, we'll start with the Lakers. They secured the top spot last year, and it didn't even matter because they went in the bubble. But that was a team that had two new superstars playing together. LeBron and AD, they were playing together for the very first time, and the Lakers went the opposite approach of the Clippers with load management, and chemistry was obviously a factor, and we got to see that. So what do the Lakers do the second half of the season? Do they prioritize health and rest, or do they go for the number one spot? Because the one seed's going to mean a lot more this year. We're not playing in a bubble come playoff time. Looking at what the Lakers have the rest of the way, well, they got a big one coming up. End of March, they'll take on the 76ers. In April, they get the Clippers, they get the Nets, they get the back-to-back with the Jazz. Not an easy stretch for the Lakers the rest of the way. LeBron James may be the front-runner for the MVP. I think odds are he gets it this year. And again, I think we see the Lakers turn it on the second half. They make a push for the one seed. Phoenix, I don't know that anyone could have predicted that the Suns would have the second-best record at the All-Star break in the West. And it would be the Jazz that are in front of Phoenix. I don't know that anyone could have predicted that. But Phoenix, man, they played some really good basketball as of late. It's almost like a Jazz-esque run because the Suns were 8-8, and then they won 16 of 19. That's a pretty good basketball team. They got some games coming up, too, that really, I think, will tell you what Phoenix is made of. April, they get the Clippers and the Jazz back-to-back. Then they get the Lakers at the beginning of May. I don't believe Phoenix finishes as a top two seed. I think they eventually would drop to number four. And so whoever is that one seed would probably get them in round two. And then you have to talk about the Clippers right now as well. Are the Clippers better right now than they were last year? They look better offensively. Even with Montrezl Harrell gone, they look better offensively. But against strong teams, they haven't been that great. I mean, they eked out a win against the Jazz just a couple of weeks back. It's a team, again, it's a similar situation. I think as long as Paul George and Kawhi Leonard are healthy, this is a team that is going to probably look closer to a 20-6 team down the final 26 games of the season. A 30-7 squad, somewhere along that ring. They're that good when they're healthy. I think that this team is better from a chemistry standpoint this year than they were last year. There were a lot of chemistry problems. But again, I'm looking at the pathways to the number one seeds in the Western Conference, and when you look at it on paper, it's in Utah's court. You got a 2.5 game cushion. You got the easiest schedule in front of you. And I would expect the Clippers to maintain the load management type role. And even if the Lakers get out of the load management role once Anthony Davis is healthy, AD is still a couple of weeks away, and he's worth a lot more to that team than I think people initially thought for some reason. So if I got to make a prediction as to who the number one seed is going to be, it's close. It's between the Lakers and Jazz. Not going to give it to the Clippers again. I believe there's too much load management down the stretch, and I don't believe in the Phoenix Suns just yet. It's all going to depend on that back-to-back. All going to depend on that back-to-back game the Lakers and the Jazz have. We got a break for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's a Monday edition of the show, and we're right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz.
About out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Some fun topics today, fun conversations as we get set for the second half of the NBA season. I think it's going to be much more entertaining than the first half. I mean, if you're a fan of basketball, you probably haven't enjoyed the first half of the season as much. If you're a Jazz fan, you loved every minute of it. I do believe the second half of the season is going to be much more entertaining. We'll continue to talk about that in the coming days. Also tomorrow, it's Football Tuesday. We'll bring it back. We'll talk about a lot happening in the league right now. The new league season begins in 9 days, and so all the trades that we've talked about, they become official at that point. And I think there's going to be plenty more trades and player movement coming up within the next week. The franchise tag deadline is set for tomorrow. And really, once the new league season begins, That's what I like to talk about the NFL draft, because you start to see some of the moves that teams are making, positioning. You know, free agency is going to be here before we know it. That's when the NFL draft talk really becomes fun, because I think we're going to see some picks moved relatively soon on top of everything else. We'll talk about that tomorrow on Football Tuesday. Also, we'll continue to talk spring sports tomorrow. We'll talk to Coach Kurt Nunley, the Carbon Lady Dino softball team. He's back after taking a couple of years off from coaching. He's back. He's going to lead the Lady Dinos into the new year, which begins Thursday. That's their first game of the season on Thursday. So we'll talk to Coach Nunley on the show tomorrow. We'll catch up with Coach Cincineros and Coach Bell a little bit later on in the week. The spring sports season, it's here and it's gone in a hurry. So we better make sure we highlight every ounce of it that we possibly can. We got to start talking USU Eastern baseball and softball on top of everything else, because now conference play is just about to begin for those seasons, even though basketball's not over yet. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, the local sports scene's been hectic, to say the least. We'll talk more about that on the show tomorrow. Want to thank Coach Rob Smith for taking out the time to join us. I will see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.